Okay. Good morning, everyone. We'll begin. Welcome. We I called the series. I was going to do something else this term, but I thought we'd kind of continue on from last week. Last week we did a special session on the situation that's going on at the moment. So I thought we'd continue discussing, continue connecting, continue. Sorry?
Just thinking maybe we should do Parashat Noach today. Because we read about it.
It says Hamas, yeah. No. Actually, we're going to bring in something in Parashat Noach towards the end. So there you are. So last week, what we did was we tried to develop a perspective, sort of what we should be thinking in terms of our mindset and going through this current challenge. We talked about channeling the concern that we have, that it shouldn't be paralyzing, but rather creating a sense of urgency. Stay focused on what is happening, not to deny it, not to escape. Nurturing our belief, increasing actions. We talked about different things. Developing our pride, looking for light in the darkness. And so on. So I wanted to start a discussion today that how do we manage those emotions? Because the mind could be right. Sometimes we can think correctly and we can try and develop a mindset, and that certainly helps. We know the mind and the heart are very connected. We've talked about this many, many times. However, sometimes the mind believes and the mind is strong and the mind is positive, but the heart still worries and the heart is still anxious. So I wanted to talk about, that perspective we talked about last week is very important, but we still need to take strategies and look for options and explore strategies of what do we do actually to stay focused, to stay calm, to stay positive in terms of our emotional structure. Now, we know the emotions change also. Emotions are it's the most complicated part of our personality actually. Right, so we have a range of emotions because I think, I'm not sure this is true with everyone, but I think things shift. For example, last week, when the absolute massacre and tragedy was still very fresh, I think it was more people were shattered, people were broken, people were despair, people were just upset and depressed almost, right? But some of that has changed a bit. I think now other things are creeping in, like worry and fear. Induced, of course, by lots of different things, induced by media primarily. I mean, besides the actual situation, our media friends are not very helpful at all, in fact. And they're very good at making us feel insecure, making us feel a bit worrisome, a bit fearful, anxiety, uncertainty, confusion, and so on and so forth. I mean, if you just need you just have to know what's going on the last 24 hours to understand that, and it rises the tensions and it raises the temperature, not in our favor, and so on and so forth. So that's a problem, right? So people start to worry, start to fear somewhat legitimately sometimes, although we shouldn't. But we need to explore. So we need to explore how do we sort of get our emotions to calm, to focus, to be in line with what our mind is telling us, things we talked about last week, and to know how to think and what to do. So there's no one answer, of course. I'm just going to share a couple of ideas this week and hopefully in a few weeks, over the next couple of weeks as well. But I want to just begin with just a thought on the concept of emotions in general. Not specifically to do what we're going through now, but just in general so we get a bit of context. So we know that the emotions are a very, very important part of our human experience, feelings, right? Now, going back to the Torah, for example, we know that the Torah has many commandments to do with emotions, right? All different types. There are positive commandments that the Torah commands us to have certain emotions. For example, love of Hashem, love of God, fear of God, love of other human beings, Ahavat Yisrael, and so on. So there's like specific commandments that the Torah tells us to have. Certain emotions, certain feelings, that we should nurture certain feelings. We also have prohibitions, things that we're not supposed to do. For example, lot tachmod, do not covet, one of the Ten Commandments. Right? Don't be jealous, in other words, don't want something that someone else has. Lot tisna, don't hate. We have the concept of Pirkei Avot, the ethics of the fathers tells us how evil and how destructive kinah is jealousy, right? Anger. These types of things are spoken about a lot, and these are things we're supposed to stay away from. Now, it's a very difficult concept to actually process, because it's one thing to command us to do certain things, right? So we are human beings, and we're somewhat in control of ourselves sometimes. And therefore, if we think something is important, we can do it, even if we don't want to. We can do it even if we don't think it's important, or we don't relate to it, or we don't connect to it, right? And that's true with all the mitzvot that God tells us to do, both the positive commandments and negative commandments. So we can even want to have a very evil thought or evil feeling of wanting to steal from someone, and we won't because we know it's immoral, right? Or we cannot be that interested in lighting a Shabbat candle, and we do it because it's an action. We are able to do things that we don't want to do, right? That's a possibility. And also we can stay away from things that we are attracted to do. When overindulged, we can be disciplined, right? We can discipline ourselves. When it comes to feelings, when it comes to emotions, it's very difficult to instruct someone to have certain feelings. There's always the problem with feelings, always the problem with emotion, right? And in fact, this goes back to very, very early literature. The Rambam, for example, Maimonides addresses this. He asks the question, how can there be a commandment in the Torah to love God? You either love him or you don't. I mean, you sound like people. We either love certain people, we don't love certain people. It's very, can't command someone to love someone, right? Same deal with God. How do you do that? How do you command someone, right? And also, how do you command someone not to have certain emotions? If I'm upset, I'm upset. If I'm angry, I'm angry, right? So, I just want to talk about that a little bit, because we actually do have quite a bit of power over our emotions. We just need to understand the context. The first concept I wanted to share is the idea of management of our emotions. In other words, it's very important to be in touch with our emotions, very important to be in touch with our feelings, and it's very important to be in touch with our emotions, because emotions are actually our personality. That's the part of us that really expresses who we are. You can't tell someone else, you can't tell a person who the person is by, you know, the shiur they give you or the lecture they give you, because anyone can give any lecture, I mean, if they know the material, right? But you can see how people react to things. When someone reacts to a situation, when reacts to someone, someone can give a lecture on not becoming angry or being kind to others, but then you see them in a situation that someone provoked them, and you see how they respond, you'll see who they really are, right? You'll see their personality come out. So being in touch with our feelings and being in touch with our emotions are really, really important, because they're actually, it's a really important part of who we are. For bad and for good, by the way. Sometimes it's a very important part of who we are to know our flaws and our weaknesses and to manage them properly. And sometimes also important to understand that emotions are a very important part of the human experience, because we need passion. We need to feel, right? Lack of emotion is a lack of life. It's not a good thing at all, right? Number one. Number two, and this is a little bit different to the common belief in society. There's many lines that go in today's society. There's no such thing as bad emotions. I'm going to argue with that. That's not true from a Jewish perspective anyway. But let me explain it. So I like to explain it this way. Feelings are actually divided into three parts. Okay, there's things called good emotions, like feeling kind, compassionate, feeling love of God, feeling excited about doing something, enthusiastic about doing something good. Those are all good emotions, right? And if we have them naturally, they're great. If we have to nurture them, that's a bit of work. Then there are things that are actually evil emotions. There are bad emotions. Hate is a bad emotion. Rage is a bad emotion, right? Jealousy, negative jealousy I'm talking about, is a bad emotion. If I feel jealous of someone else in a negative sense, that's a bad emotion. Now, we'll talk about what that means in a second, right? Then there are emotions that are not bad and not good. They're just unhealthy. And some of them are actually good initially, but they're unhealthy if they're in excess, like grief, for example. Grief is not a bad emotion. Grief is a good emotion. It only becomes unhealthy. It's never a bad emotion. Nothing evil about grieving. It's unhealthy when it's excessive. Some people can't move on and they can't process it. Then it becomes unhealthy. So you get the distinction, right? Now, here's the thing. The reason why in modern society often the line is there's no such thing as a bad emotion is because people don't want to be defined as bad. So therefore, if I say there's bad emotions and I have bad emotions, that means I'm bad. Which people are very afraid of today. People don't like to criticize themselves. There's this over-obsession. You've heard me talk about it many times. There's this over-obsession of self-acceptance. Now, the thing is like this. First of all, the whole thing's a mistake. Because When we say there are bad emotions does not mean, however, that if you have them, you're not something wrong with you. Big difference, right? And therefore, the way to understand it is as follows, and this is what I'm drawing from the sources and the literature on this, the Jewish literature is like this. Any emotion you have, even rage, even jealousy, right? The initial emotion, the initial feeling of any emotion is normal. It's normal. And God wired us that way, and He understands that, and He designs us that way. And therefore, the initial, to have that initial, in other words, for most people, unless you're completely righteous that you're above all these things, but to be upset about something, to be threatened about something, if someone says something to me and I get upset, the initial feeling, even of rage, is completely normal, and I've done nothing wrong. Right? That's the initial feeling. Whether it's a good emotion, whether it's a bad emotion, whether it's just a normal, neutral emotion, right? Because it's normal. It's just normal to be angry if someone offends you. It's normal to be jealous if you see something that, if you're prone to jealousy, right? It's normal to hate if someone, you know, and all that kind of thing. I mean, by the way, there's good hate also. I'm talking about negative hate, right? So those things are all normal. It doesn't mean that it's not an evil emotion. We need to understand that difference. Why? Why do I have to understand that it's an evil emotion? Because when God gave us a mitzvah, when He commanded us about our emotions, it wasn't about you should never have this emotion. It wasn't about you always have to have this emotion. It's about the pursuit of emotion, or the pursuit of disconnecting from an emotion. Understand? Even love of God, the Rambam says the mitzvah to love God, you can't just switch on love. It doesn't work like that. But it's a mitzvah to pursue it. How do you pursue it? See, goes the whole strategy. Learn about it, think about it, connect to it, action, whatever. There's different ways of building or nurturing an emotion, right? By the way, the same thing is with emotions that we have naturally. One of the things with emotions is that they're not consistent. You have this in marriages, in relationships. You don't love the same way every day. And just doesn't work like that. Sometimes there's a huge spark and a huge fire. Sometimes it's flat. And when it's flat, you need to do something about it. You need to pursue. You can't just switch it on, but you can pursue nurturing it, right? And the same thing with negative emotions. There are emotions that are negative. But to have them, the initial feeling of those emotions is not an evil thing. It's only evil if you accept it completely and say, well, that's just me. In other words, the commandment is to manage it. The commandment is to set in its place a process of trying to calm it down, of trying to develop a perspective, of trying to minimize it. Sometimes a lifelong mission. But that's the commandment. To have it initially and even to take a while to get rid of it or to minimize it or to manage it is not a problem. It doesn't mean it's not a negative emotion. There are negative emotions. Like hate is a negative emotion. Excessive worry is a negative emotion. That doesn't mean that we're bad for having it. It just means we're normal. But what we are commanded to do is to work with it, to take some responsibility and to manage it, right? So let's just come back to the discussion we're having today. So today I want to focus a little bit on worry and fear, which I think is an emotion that is making its rounds, let's say. First thing is we need to be in touch with it, by the way. We need to know that it's there. Sometimes people say, are you worried? No, I'm not. And they are, right? So we'll get to that later, but that's an important thing in managing emotions, to first be in touch with our emotions, right? Now let's just talk about the concept of worry in general, worrying and being anxious and so on. Worrying is not a bad thing altogether. Worrying has its place on a very practical level. That's how life works. If we would never worry, we'd be reckless and irresponsible. Right? If someone is a relative, if someone becomes unwell, a child becomes unwell, of course you worry. And that's what prompts you into urgency to call a doctor and to go to the emergency room and to get the best care that you can and so on and so forth, right? So worry is a good thing initially. It has its place. It's what leads to responsible living. But just to worry about things that we really are not in control of, or just to excessively worry, is a negative thing because it leads to dysfunction and paralysis, as we spoke about last week. Right? Emotional paralysis, spiritual paralysis, functional behavior paralysis, right? And therefore becomes a negative emotion, right? So the way we've talked about it in the past is that we divide worry into two parts. We worry about things that we can control and that we have a choice over. So, for example, you have a choice. If you're worried sufficiently to call a doctor or to get the best healthcare, that's a good worry. prompted you into action, you did the action and you responded properly and responsibly. But then to worry about what's going to be, maybe something will happen that I didn't know about, and maybe something this, something that, worry about world events, worry about things that we cannot control, when that becomes excessive, it never is good. At least it's normal, again, it's normal. And particularly during the time we're going through now, it is a normal thing to be a little bit scared. It's a normal thing to be uncomfortable. It's very normal. It's very normal when you have the whole news bombarding us and blaming us for things that we didn't do and just perpetuating lies and stuff, which I don't want to go into detail, which I'm sure you all know better than me. But it's normal to lead to being unsettled and to being a little bit more fearful about what's going to happen and to be... It is normal. It doesn't mean it's good. So it is normal. We are all normal people, thank God. Hopefully. But we have to manage it, right? We know that excessive worry, on a spiritual level, excessive worry becomes a problem, as we spoke about last week, it becomes a spiritual problem because it interferes with our emunah, it interferes with our faith, with our bitachon, with our trust in God. So all these things are important to understand. So how do we manage it? So of course, last week we talked about certain actions that we do, channeling it into some positivity, generating positivity, taking on a mitzvah and so on that we spoke about last week. But how do we specifically manage the feelings? So I'm going to share with you a couple of ideas. Before I do that, I want to show you a little video. Because last week you talked about generating some positivity. So I'm going to do that today, show you a couple of interesting videos. I'm going to show you, because we're just talking about bitachon and trusting in God. I'm going to show you a religious female soldier in the IDF and how she talks about bitachon. I thought it was quite amazing. So let's see.
My name is Nora Goodman, and I'm a soldier in the IDF Schools for Sweden. This past week has been extremely challenging for Amishrala on every single level imaginable, and I know many of us are just feeling lost and hopeless, and like we want to help, we don't know exactly what to do or where to turn during this very, very challenging time. So I'm here to deliver a quick message that will hopefully help and inspire people that are going through a hard time right now. I know instinctively, during challenging times, our instinct is to turn to the news or to turn to politicians or to different sources to try to gain clarity and some understanding of this very, very challenging, overwhelming situation. But I'm here to tell you that the greatest thing that we can do during this time is stand in our emunah, bitachon, and Hashem. Specifically, learning Torah every single day, and I highly recommend Shara Bitachon. I've been learning it every day, and it's really, really impacted me during this crazy time, especially being on base. In the third chapter of Shara Bitachon, Rabbeinu Bahai brings five different factors that help strengthen our Bitachon and Hashem. And he explains that one of them is realizing that there's divine providence, that there's a Hashkafa on every single human in this world. Hashem created us, and therefore he watches over us and he recreates the world every single second so he understands what we're going through. The Baal Shem Tov takes this one step further and explains that not only is there divine providence on every single human, but on every single thing that Hashem created, he watches over closely. He gives the example of even the smallest blade of grass that sways in the wind has a shkacha over it. Hashem is constantly watching over it and recreating the world and understanding what it's going through. So if you can kind of internalize this message and realize that if Hashem is watching over the smallest blade of grass, of course he's watching over us many, 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 many times more. And he understands what we're going through and understands the struggle and the suffering that we're going through right now, and he's here for us and he hears our cry. And the greatest thing that we can do during this very challenging time is strengthen our relationship with him and our trust in him and our bitachon in him. And just another short thought, what's unique about this war is that it's a war of all Klal Yisrael, meaning every single person needs to do their part in order to help us win. We have soldiers on the front line, but every single person has opportunity to be a soldier in their own way. Everyone has their own unique shlichas, their own unique mission, what they can do to contribute to help with this war. So we have soldiers on the front line, we have people learning Torah, people giving tzedakah, people packing care packages for chayalim. We need every single person as a group effort to help win this war. So when you learn Shara Bitachon and you strengthen your emunah and you seek the heavens and connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this directly impacts the success of the army and all of Klal Yisrael. So I just give us a bracha that we should have much of tzafa and we should all be united as one, because this is the only way that we're going to be able to get through this. And wishing everyone lots of good news.
There you are. You know, it's a very interesting thing. I'll show you a couple more in a second. What's fascinating to me is that obviously, you know, we all sit here and we say, you know, we have to do things for the chayalim, we have to pray for them, inspire them, send them messages, send them letters. I think it's actually going both ways, or maybe it's going more the other way. They're actually inspiring us, which is unbelievable. I mean, the stuff that's coming out is really unbelievable. Okay. So I want to go back to a verse that I've mentioned in the past, but I want to break it down a bit more comprehensively today. I want to just mention that some of the things I'm going to share with you in the next few minutes comes actually from some of it I'm going to develop it a bit, but some of it comes from a lecture I just heard from Dr. Pelkowitz, who you've heard me quote him before. He just gave a talk in America, you know, strengthening people through this time. I'm going to quote some of the stuff that he says. So there's a pasuk in Mishlei, in Proverbs, from King Solomon. All right, I'm going to read the whole thing, but then I'm going to only focus on part, and we'll come back to the second part later. So it says, "Da'aga b'lev ish," if there's a worry in a man's heart, "yashchena." Now the Sepharia translation is, it says, "let him quash it," which is not really a very good translation at all. Basically, it's like, get rid of it, right? But we'll see, it's not so simple that it actually means like that. And I'm going to share with you what the Talmud says about that. Right? So, da'aga b'lev ish, if there's worry in the heart of a man, yashchena, you should remove it, quash it. And then it says, v'davar tov yisamchena, and turn it into joy with a good word. Okay. We'll leave that second part for a moment. Now, in the Talmud, the Tractate of Yuma, there's a dispute, or it looks like a dispute, between two great Talmudic rabbis. What does the word yashchena actually mean? You know, in Hebrew, the way Hebrew words work, there's often different translations, and also grammatically, there's a whole, it's a very complicated, almost science of how the letters of Hebrew work, that some letters are interchangeable with letters. And for example, if you take the shin, just to give you a quick crash course here, right? The second letter of that word yashchena is a shin. But actually, if you have a shin, you know, in the Torah itself, letters are not, don't have vowels. You know that, right? In a Sefer Torah. That's why it's hard to, the Torah readers have a hard time. In the Torah scroll, like a Sefer Torah, like in the Tefillin, like, which is written like a Tefillin or Mezuzahs, the letters don't have vowels. You have to know the vowels, but they don't actually, they're not printed, or they're not written in, right? Which is why it takes a long time to learn a parsha, right? Those of you who had sons who went through Bar Mitzvah will know that, and they just sometimes read a small part. But it's a big thing to know how to read the whole part, right? You have to have a good memory, and you have to know how to. It's the same thing with the notes, by the way. There's musical notation to the words that are not printed in the Torah. They're in the Chumash. They're printed, and you have to know how you have to learn them. But then you have to, when you come to Shabbat, you have to be able to read the whole thing without the vowels or without the notes, right? And read it correctly. Okay, so that's. But what that does also, what that teaches us, is that often words that are written in Tanakh and original, they have two meanings because they actually could be written differently. For example, that second letter, which is Yashchena, right? That second letter is a shin, which could be it could also be read as a sin. You know, a shin has a dot on the right side, a sin on the left side. It could be written as Yashchena. So it could be Yashchena or Yashchena. Now, what does that mean? So in the Talmud, there's an argument between two great sages. The one's name was Rav Ami, the other one was Rav Asi. One said that it meant, Yashchena means you should remove it. Like similar to what they said, you should quash it. You could put it off. Just the green button. One said that if you have a worry, if there's a worry in a person's heart, remove it, get rid of it. Easier said than done, but that's what he says. That's your goal, get rid of it. Get rid of the worry. That's the goal. The other one says, no, you should read it yashchena, which means like sicha. In Hebrew, means sicha means to talk. Yashchena la'acherim. Share it with others. Express it. Talk to others about it. Right? That's the two views. Now, in the 11th century, there was a great Talmudic scholar. His name was the Rif, Rav Alfasi. He was the teacher of the teacher of Rashi. Rashi's a famous commentator. And Rashi's teacher's teacher was the Rif. He wrote on the Talmud, he wrote different things. He was I think he even lived in Morocco for a while, if I'm not mistaken. He was a Sephardi sage and a great, great, great person. He said the following. He said, you know, we have in the Talmud very often when there are two opinions, and often it's a dispute. We have, the Talmud is full of disputes. That's why Jewish law works. It works with analysis and different views. They all follow the same system, the same process of how you work out the halakha and so on. And it comes to different conclusions because of different ways of interpretation, even legitimate interpretation, right? So often when we have disputes, more often than not, when we have disputes, it means it's two different opinions. However, says the Rif, in this case, When you look at this argument, look at the two views of how to interpret the verse. It's actually not an argument, he says. They're talking about exactly the same thing. One is talking about the goal, the other one is talking about the strategy. Exactly, they are exactly on the same page. The one of you says, Yashchena, the goal is to calm the worry down. Worry is not a good thing. To walk around completely worried the whole time, and it's not always so easy. We do worry, we all worry a lot. Especially if we're, you know, kind of Jewish, and that doesn't help in terms of worry. And we just worry, that's where we are. But the goal is to minimize the worry. When we say remove it, that's easier said than done. No one always removes all the worry, but you know, the Torah always talks about the goal, and then you've got to work towards the goal. Progress, make progress towards the goal. And the second opinion is saying, yes, that is the goal, but how do you do it? How do you do it? He says, you communicate it to other people. Now, you share it. You share it with other people. What does that mean? So, I'll just run through with you a couple of interpretations of what that actually means in the commentaries subsequently, right? There's some interesting ones, spiritually, how it works to share with others. And then there's one that just in terms of, you know, I'll talk about it in terms of spiritual terms, but then translate it into modern terms. So one says, for example, that a very interesting idea. So what's the point of sharing with others? This is not talking about necessarily a time when there's collective worry like now, right? I'm talking about someone has this personal worry. So he shares it with others, right? He's going through a tough time. He's going through a distressful time. He's really worried. He's really anxious. So he shares it with a group of people, a group of friends, a group of families. How does that help? So there's a spiritual explanation, not the explanation I'm going to focus on, but there's a spiritual explanation, and that is like this, that, you know, when a person goes through a distressful time, we always have to accept, you know, that this is what God wants, and this is emunah, and this is what's supposed to happen. We don't understand, but this is what it is. That's because this is what God wanted for me. But then when I share it with others, what happens often is you put others into worry, right? You make others distressed. Now, that's not such a bad thing necessarily, because it's not someone else's problem. This is my problem, right? But when I share it with others and I make it everyone's problem, they didn't sign up for it. God didn't ask them to be distressed. And therefore, when they pray for us to get rid of it, it's easier because God takes it away from them and then takes away the whole thing. It's like an interesting spiritual explanation of what this actually means. Okay. There's also the idea, what does it mean, sicha? What does it mean to communicate with others? It means to pray for others. There's a fascinating Talmud that says that generally, we know the power of tefillah, the power of prayer, right? So it says that kol ha-mitpalel ba'at chaviro, if you pray for your friend, if you pray for something else that someone else needs, you get answered first. So one of the great strategies, spiritual strategies, when we go through a time of distress, when we go through a time when we are distressed and we're going through a tough time, even personally, what we do is we try to find it within our heart to pray for someone else's sorrows, pray for someone else's worries, and that helps us as well. That's another concept. Others say that just the idea of communicating to others is that they will then pray for you and so on. However, some of the commentaries say it's a very simple strategy. And this is hundreds and hundreds of years ago, before modern research. As you know, many things we find in the advice of the commentators of the Torah often are ahead of time. They tell us things which now become so important, and become so known in terms of modern research, right? The Aderet Eliyahu, a great commentary on the Talmud, says it's very simple. He says when you share the load, if you share with someone else, you connect with someone else. He doesn't explain why. He said you alleviate your own distress. You alleviate your own worry. He uses the word kizuhi derech ha'olam. This is the way of the world. Just the way it is. When you connect to others, it becomes easier. Which highlights, right, and that's the first part of this pasuk. So again, just to summarize. They're not arguing. It's not, there's a dispute. Should you get rid of the worry or should you communicate it to others? They're talking about the same thing. The goal is to minimize worry, to minimize fear, to minimize anxiety. The strategy is, number one strategy is, to share it with others, to communicate it with others, to talk, right? Which is not just about connecting with others and spending time with others, but actually to talk out your emotions. Now, we need to understand and just really clarify what that means. Because how we talk is really important. On the one hand, sometimes when we talk about, particularly if we talk about a collective challenge, like what's going on now, and I've seen this happen in front of my eyes when people talk, instead of calming each other down, they actually make each other more anxious, right? Oh, it's terrible. Yes, it's terrible. This one, that one, you know, this country, that country, this new state, this, and we end up making each other more anxious and more worried. Now, of course, that's not the point, right? Point is more not just about what's going on in the world. That's not what we're talking about communicating with each other. We're not talking about sharing news. We all have this. We're all capable of looking at the news ourselves. We We're all doing it, even though we shouldn't be doing it as much as we are, but we're doing it. Okay, we'll talk about that soon. But sharing means sharing what we're feeling. Sharing the impact that it's having on us, right? And to do it properly, to be in touch with our feelings, which is, by the way, not everyone does that easily. When you actually think about it, what is it, like we sometimes feel very rattled, very unsettled, but we're actually not sure what we're feeling. And it's important to be in tune. It's important to spend some time just thinking about what is it that's unrattling me? What's doing it to me? What's unsettling it? Is it anger? Is it fear? Is it worry? I think now it's more worry and fear than anything else, but it, right? We need to be in touch with what we're feeling. And to be able to share with others honestly and to be open without judging others or without being judged, just to share with others what we're feeling. To get together and not to be afraid. Not to be afraid to share. Not again, not with negativity and anger making it worse than it is, because that communication could do that too, in a negative way, but in a constructive way. Sharing and connecting with others. Now, Dr. Pelkovitz quoted something quite fascinating I'm going to share with you about some of the more modern research. You know, as we've spoken about before, there's a lot of research in the last couple of decades about trauma and about negative things that are happening and impact on people and so on. So, as you know, I'm not very good at biology, but I'll try to do this properly. But there's a part of the brain called the Broca's area. The Broca's area is the part of the brain that is language. That's where the source of language is, right? It's a very powerful part of the brain. Because language is not just about words, as you know. Language is a very deep thing. We've spoken about this in the past. Language is actually the essence of the human being, right? And what they now can do, as we know, with MRIs and amazing technology, they can see different parts of the brain are more active than others. And when parts of the brain are active, it lights up, right? So when the Broca's area is lit up, it's actually a very critical part of the healing process. Fascinating modern research, which goes right into what we're talking about now. Now, in a book which I've quoted in a couple of series ago, when we talked about trauma, from Bessa van der Kolk's book on trauma, The Body Keeps Score, right? It talks about when people often go through a trauma, one of the things that's affected, right? Sorry, let me backtrack a second. When people go through trauma, it affects the brain, right? We spoke about this then when we talked about it. It affects the brain in many, many ways. It affects our response to stress, and that's what brings the whole sort of post-traumatic stress disorder, the inappropriate and disproportionate responses to things, triggers, and so on and so forth. By the way, talking about triggers, that's something that's going on now as well. I mean, you need to know that in many communities, people have grown up with, in our times, people have grown up with relatives or stories with the Holocaust and things like that. And for some people, what's going on now is extremely triggering. But that's all that happens to the brain when trauma happens. However, there are other changes to the brain which block and stand in the way of proper healing, right? One of the things that they were able to measure is that the ability to express and communicate the story of the trauma or the feelings of the trauma brought, in other words, the Broca's area of the brain is actually affected, and therefore language becomes much more difficult, right? So he says one of the changes that was decreased activities in the Broca's area, which is responsible for speech, right? One of the participants in the study had lost her daughter in a pregnancy. Car accidents was a very traumatic thing, and had a very, very, very hard time of expressing what actually happened. Because what happens is that when people go through a traumatic experience, suddenly talking becomes more important, but talking becomes much more difficult. Meaning, I don't mean just talk, I mean expression of feelings, expression of stories, right? And although we don't like to put it in these words, but the truth is, on a different level and each person in a different way, I'm obviously not talking about the people who actually went through the horrific activities of the last 10 days, 11 days, but actually everyone, to some degree, is going through a certain level of trauma. Because it is traumatic to read and to hear what has gone on. Especially if we're watching or watch those images that have come out of the last 11 days, which, by the way, isn't such a good idea from a psychological point of view. But nevertheless, it's important that they're there, and it's important that evil is seen for what it is, and it has its place. But I'm just saying that the continuous, in fact, therapists that I've been hearing talk about these things are advising against excessive watching of all these images, because actually it has a long-lasting effect, and it has a certain effect of trauma, right? But why I'm bringing it up is because it might be a bit more difficult to express exactly what we're feeling, but now is actually the time to connect with other people, to spend time with family, to spend time with friends, not just to connect on a sort of, but to actually talk and share honestly, openly. That's one of the big things that need to happen now. It will definitely focus us. It will calm us down. And to share with honesty all that we're feeling, to be in touch with what we're feeling, right? To ask them and to explore the feelings of others, to ask people, what are you feeling? By the way, especially with children, same thing. Children need to be, that's what they're talking about now. You need to be honest with children, not over dramatized thing. Obviously, it depends on ages, different processes, but it's about exploring, asking them questions. What are you feeling? Bringing it out, trying to bring out within ourselves, within others, and with children, right? At the same time, when we do share these feelings, as I said before, it's got to be with the intent of the goal. Remember, it's coming from one verse. Yashchena la'acherim, to communicate with others, is for the purpose of yashchena, to remove it, to minimize the worry, to minimize the anxiety. So we need to do it in a calm way. We need to do it in a caring way, in a compassionate way, in an empathetic way, so that we are just sharing, we're connecting, we're opening up to each other and connecting on a very deep level. Doing that lights up the broker's area. When you do that, it actually brings healing. It actually brings calmness. At the same time, when we're sharing these feelings, it needs to be mixed. Not just sharing the feelings of anxiety. We also have to share and talk about and express with others things that are positive. And there's lots, right? We have to bring them into the discussion. Not to minimize the feelings. Two separate things. We have to share what we're feeling. We have to share our anxiety. We have to share our fears with others. It could be with friends. It could be with family. It could be sitting around the family table. Now, more than ever, family meals together are so important. And to bring the discussion around what we're feeling. Again, not with anger and hate, but with empathy, right? Because we have to bring light into the darkness. And we know that when you bring light, it lights up darkness. It's a very important thing. We look for light. We spoke about this last week. And we turn on the candle just a little bit. We push away a lot of darkness. So in those discussions, talking to other people, as we connect and communicate with other people, we need to share our feelings. We need to share what we're feeling and express those fears, express those worries. But also find good stories to bring in the discussion. Because when you speak about, now we can see a good story and just be inspired, but it's important to share them and to talk about them, because we know the power of speech. It goes always. The power of speech is amazing. We've talked about this so many times. The power of speech is to bring something to the forefront that cannot, even though it exists before the speech, but when you talk it, you put it into speech, you put it into words, it just has a much more powerful and deep effect. Part of the thing in this little talk that I heard from Dr. Pelk was, he says, we need to talk about the pride. I mean, there's, you know, he says, sometimes this is what happens, right? In all horrific circumstances, there's always that little bit of light that you discover. One of the things is just looking around at the Jewish world, we should feel, so his words, but I fully agree with it, we should feel that deep, deep, deep sense of pride, right? Just looking around the world and seeing the chesed that is going, and seeing the kindness that is going on. Seeing the way we conduct ourselves in a time of crisis. It's just amazing. Seeing how we demonstrate it. Look at that rally that we had, you know, with 10,000 people. Calm, peaceful, positive, hopeful. Amazing. Just amazing. And it's all around the world. I just saw a video the other day in Borough Park of 10,000 people gathering in the street just to daven. Security nightmare. I'm sure they took care of it, but... And it's been happening all over the world. The amount of prayer, the amount of getting together, the unity, right? The unity is incredible. The achdus is incredible now. And you know, it's something almost unprecedented. Now we know that us Jews are like family. We fight a lot, right? That's the truth. But I see what is going on now, and I'm talking about in Israel particularly. In Israel, you know, the polarization is even stronger. And in Israel, to have a look and to see what I'm going to show you one soon, right? Of people just putting aside their differences, and they are deep differences. And some of them are legitimate differences, and some of them are philosophical differences, and theological differences, and religious differences, and dress differences, and all kinds of differences in Israel, from one extreme to another. And to see everyone just put that aside and to be together is fantastic. It's unbelievable. We should feel that pride, because if we feel that pride and we feel that positivity, it helps. It helps us counter our worry, our anxiety, our fear, because oneness, as I said last week, Barcheinu Avinu, blessing comes from unity. We know that. We know that throughout history, blessing comes from unity. And the unity that's now is definitely going to generate tremendous blessing, but also the feeling of positive feeling brings. Let me show you a little video of and much exactly that. The background is something like this. There was a bunch of people that came to a hospital to volunteer, right? So you'll see in this little video, it's like a little bit of a snapshot of what's happening in the bigger society, right? You have every kind of Jew there, with a yarmulke, without a yarmulke, with a long jacket, with a short jacket. Every kind of Jew you'll see, right? And look what they're doing. right? Long payas, kippah shragad, nutid yarmulke, not a nutid yarmulke, with a yarmulke, without a yarmulke, and all dancing together. Now, there's a lot of dancing going on in Israel, as you know that. Amazing amount of dancing. Just generating hope. But let me tell you what they're singing. Right? What's that?
Altura.
From Altura, exactly. There's a thing which a lot of people say every day in their davening, after Aleinu, three verses about not being afraid. And it says, the first one is, Altira mipacha pidom, do not be afraid from sudden fear. Right? And the second verse, which is one they're singing, it's a song, Utsa Itza is that the nations of the world will scheme, they'll plan, but too far, but the end will be torn up. Will be victorious. In fact, it goes back to a story, a midrash, a very fascinating midrash, which is the story of Purim, when the Jews were under terrible threat from Haman. And at that time, all the Jews were under one jurisdiction, under one rule, one sovereignty, and he was threatened to annihilate everyone. Right? And Mordechai, it says, who was leading the Jewish people at the time, he walked out once, and he threw three children coming from school. And the Talmud tells us that children sometimes are blessed with prophecy. And he stopped the three children, he asked each one what they learned today in cheder. What did they learn today in school? And each one said a different pasuk, and it's those three, they come from different places. They were different classes, I guess. Right? And it's these three verses that we say after davening, a lot of people say them. And one of them was Utz Eid Service Tufar. And it says in the middle, Mordechai walked away and he said, it's all good. I know it's okay. If these three children are saying that, it's going to be okay. And that's what they're singing. They're dancing, but they're singing this. They're very focused songs. They're not just songs, right? They're singing with belief and with prayer at the same time. So, when I say connect with other people, one of the things Dr. Pelkovitz is really strong about, and he talks about, he says, just don't connect by being in the same room. Connection means we need to focus. You need to talk to someone, not on the phone. It needs to be eye to eye. He talks about this a lot. Right? Because today we kind of hide behind devices and hide behind all sorts of things, hide behind emails. When we talk about connecting and sharing and communicating our feelings, it means the old-fashioned way. Sitting around a table, sitting in a coffee shop, sitting somewhere, and talking, eye to eye, watching a person, making eye contact, and actually sharing properly. So that's the first thing that I want to share. Sharing and communication, the two meanings of the pasuk, yashchena and yaschena, the goal and the strategy. Remove it, the strategy is share it. Second thing I want to talk about, and this comes again from Dr. Pelkowitz's talk, is the idea of being present. Right? And while that's always important, and you've heard me talk about it a lot, mindful living and being present in the moment, it's so important now, and it's more difficult now. I'm talking to myself, by the way. I'm as guilty as anyone in this room. And maybe you're not guilty. Maybe I'm just guilty. But if you are, we're in good company. Because I've been on this a lot. Right? We're very distracted. We're looking for messages. We're looking updates. We're looking for this. Why? Part of it is our need to control. Part of it is our need to know everything. We want to know what this one said, what that one said, this perspective, that perspective. Right? I don't know if you're doing it, but I've been doing it a lot. I shouldn't, but I have. Right? And therefore, we're more distracted than ever now. And besides that, emotions do that to us. Strong emotions do that to us, especially negative ones, right? If you think about it, just think about worry for a minute, right? What is worry about? It's never about now. If I sit here and worry, there's nothing to worry about now, right? We're in this room. What are you worried about?
Future.
Stuff, exactly. It's always stuff about what happened yesterday and how it's going to impact tomorrow. Or what happened an hour ago and how it's going to impact an hour from now, correct? It's never about the moment. Because if you were, God forbid, in any immediate crisis, you actually wouldn't worry. It would be a completely different respect. It would be a different response altogether. Right? So negative emotions, worry, anger is a bit like that too, but specifically worry and anxiety, takes us away from the present time. That's what it does. In fact, it's like worry can't live in the moment because it's not about the moment. You know what I mean? It's like they tell you, like we have a sore throat, you should take manuka honey. They say bacteria can't live in honey. Same thing. Worry can't live in the moment. And therefore, one of the things that we need to do now more than ever is to learn to be present and to minimize that scatteredness of the mind, which we're all going through. It's about taking strategies, like we're talking to someone, make an effort to talk to them, to be fully there. Don't talk to them and check this at the same time, or don't think about other stuff. You're talking to someone, just try to forget, I'm in the moment, now. Right? As I said, I'm working on it too. I'm only sharing with you because, you know, when we share with each other, it's not only good to share our fears, right? Which has been with us, I mean, again, in the spirit of sharing, I mean, I can't tell you I've been completely calm in the last few days because I haven't. It is. It's very unsettling what's going on. However, we need to share not only how we're feeling, we need to share also what we plan to do about it, right? And it's just an interesting thing that happened. You know, like we have over here in the shul that we have here, we have a custom that every at the end of Sukkot on Shmini Atzeret, we have a Fabrengen upstairs in the sukkah. The guys are davening on Shabbat, so we get together. And every year we have Fabrengen during Sukkot, and every Sukkot at the end of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeret, the last Fabrengen before we go to Simchat Torah, we say L'chaim together and we go around and everyone says what they're going to take on this coming year, how they're going to improve this coming year. It's a very beautiful experience. And the last one to share is normally me, because everyone turns to me and says, that's very nice, you're asking everyone to grow, what are you going to do, right? So now I come prepared. And I actually took upon myself something that I haven't implemented yet, so I'm telling you that now so that I'll be inspired to implement it. And I was actually, because I tried this a bit before Sukkot, and the most wonderful feeling, I actually turned off my phone for an hour a day. I don't mean while I'm sleeping. I mean while I was up and in the study and doing stuff, I just turned it off so I can just focus on what I'm doing for an hour. And lo and behold, I discovered when I turned it on, the world was the same world. Nothing much has happened, right? Although lots of things do happen in 1 hour now. But nevertheless, we just need to, right? And then Simchat Torah came and everything happened and it didn't happen. Because I'm anxious, like everyone else. But I need to work at it. It's an important thing. We have to just take ourselves off our phones part of the day and just focus. Be present, because worry cannot live in the presence. And thirdly, I'm going to just go back to that pasuk. 1 second. Oh, there we are. There's a second part of that pasuk, right, which we didn't talk about. Joy, besides joy, but what does it say? No, but it says, what's going to bring the joy? V'davar tov yisamchena. A good thing will make it happy, will make you happy. Right? Turn it into joy. What does that mean? As we've spoken about many, many, many times, it's not good enough to minimize something negative. Once you're successful in doing that, if you've calmed yourself down, if you've shared with others, you've connected with others, you've learned to be more present, and you're managing the emotion a bit better than you were before. I'm not talking about now eliminating worry. I don't think that's going to happen in the near future, but minimized it and brought more calmness. You always have to replace it with something. And here's the depth of what King Solomon said, King Solomon's wisdom. He said, Da'aga belev ish yashchena. If you have worry, remove it, but through sharing it, right? That was the goal and the strategy. But then he says, don't leave it there. V'davar tov yashchena. You need to replace it with davar tov, something good. And that will bring joy. That how it turns it into joy. That's the interpretation I want to share with you. V'davar tov, you need a good thing. Replace it with good. Now, to stay focused and to stay calm, we spoke about this last week, but it's really important to do good things. Whether it's a mitzvah, whether it's learning Torah. Some of the commentaries say that Tov refers to learning and Torah and so on. But also the idea of giving. You know, giving is a very powerful thing, and people doing this now, right? Volunteering, giving. You know, in Hebrew, I don't know if you know this, I forgot what you call this in English, but in Hebrew, some words are like this. There's a term in English to describe such a word. But it's a word that spelled same forwards and backwards. How do you call it? What's that? Palindrome. That's it. So the word to give in Hebrew is natan, right? Or noten without a vav, right? Nun taf nun. That's a palindrome. Natan is spelled nun taf nun, and you can do it backwards. Nun taf nun. Why? Because when you give, you get. That's why. Right? The word for giving is natan. If we help other people now, if we volunteer, if we give charity, whatever the case is, we need to be doing good things. We need to inspire ourselves. We need to share good videos. But we also need to do good things. We can't just replace. We can't calm down our worry and then say, okay, well, now what? Because then the worry will just come back. We need to replace with something else so the worry doesn't get in there anymore, right? So that it's pushed away a little bit. And part of that is by doing things. Finally, and I wanted to share with you something that Dr. Perkovitz in his talk was talking about it well also. And again, I can tell you, I can speak for myself, and I'm sure many of you the same way, last week at least, I wasn't very good at this at all, is actually creating structure. Routine is very important. Now, it's a contradiction, because sometimes we go through a very tough time, routine is the first thing that goes out the window, right? And by the way, getting into routine doesn't mean we don't care. This is what, like last week, the feeling was, and I had the same feeling. I mean, the week after Simchat Torah, I wasn't very functional, and many of you weren't either, I'm sure. But it is not that the situation has changed. It hasn't changed. We still have to stay focused on it. And being in a routine doesn't mean that we don't care. I spoke about this last week. We have to care. That's a bad thing. We should not get into routine to the point where you're now distracted and we've forgotten about it. God forbid. As long as our brothers and sisters are in trouble, we need to keep thinking about it. But without being dysfunctional. We need to think about it, but force ourselves to be in a routine. We have to eat on time and eat properly. We have to get back into our exercise routines, those that have ignored it, like me. We have to have meal times. We have to eat properly. We have to have good sleeping habits. Right? Because routine manages emotion. We know that bad emotions, depression, anxiety, worry, all come with lack of something. I'll use an interesting thing that Dr. Pelkowitz said. He said that the research shows that when, especially in times of crisis, says when you don't do exercise, it's like taking a pill. You know what kind of pill it is? It says like taking a pill that induces depression. Not an antidepressant, it induces depression. Lack of exercise. It's like a guarantee that brings you down. So we have to, even if it's walks or whatever the case is, but we have to do that because we have to stay focused. We have to stay focused for ourselves, for our family, and for them, and for the whole Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael, because we can't do good things. We spoke about last week about doing good things. We can pray for them. We can do a mitzvah. We can do all the things we spoke about last week, but if we're dysfunctional, we won't do those things. We can talk about it, think about it, but we won't end up doing it because we need to be functional people, and we need to be less anxious, focused, but less anxious, right? As I said last week, sense of urgency, not despair, and that is by being in a proper routine. And I promised you something on Noach, so I'll just slip it in there very quickly. You know that we in this week's Shabbat we read the story of Noach. Yeah. And there was a destruction of the world, there was a mubble, there was a flood, there was chaos, there was real chaos in the world. Of course there was also a teva, an ark. And some people are talking about Noach now because God said he's bringing a flood because there's Hamas in the it doesn't actually mean Hamas the group, it means Hamas means thievery and badness. But anyway, there was a teva, there's an ark. And Baal Shem Tov says that the ark is, the word teva means an ark, but the word teva also means words. He says we have to fortify ourselves, protect ourselves from the flood by words of prayer, words of learning, words of kindness to other people. That's what the Baal Shem Tov said, that's the concept of the ark. But we also know that when God told Noah to build a teva, right? When God told Noah to build a teva, he told him that when he goes to the teva, he said, Tzohar ta'ase la teva. Make a tzohar in the teva. You know what the word tzohar means?
Window.
Sorry?
Window.
A window to bring a light. Some say it's a window. Some say it was a very shining stone that generated light. But it's to make light. It's the word tzohar, right? Now light can mean or, it can mean different things. But tzohar, use the word tzohar. Why? The commentaries say a fascinating thing. When you bring light into the world, the word tzohar is the same word as tzara. Distress, trouble, anguish. But we need to change the tzara into tzohar. How do we do that? By tzohar. By protecting ourselves in good things like the ark, but also bringing in light, being positive, strengthening our emunah, strengthening our bitachon. It's all hard stuff now. It's hard work, but this is what we need to do. This is what we call it. You heard that girl say before, that we all have our role. We are all fighting this war, and we all have to make sure it's seen through till the end. And part of our role is to bring light. And I'm just going to end up very quickly with his most beautiful videos, because I just am overwhelmed and inspired by the hope, the positivity, and the belief and the faith of the Chayalim. They're unbelievable. Listen to this. Look at this. This was a camp with, in the base, there was some Chayalim, and they wanted to pray, and they asked for a Torah scroll, and eventually it arrived. Look what they did. Oh no, sorry, one second. Oh, see the Torah in the sample there? Hundreds of them, just dancing. It's incredible. But also, again, what are they singing? Singing a verse from Tanakh. It was sang by Samson on his last fight against the Philistines before he died. And he turned to God and he said, Chaskeni na chaskeni. Strengthen me, achapam, this time. strengthen me one last time, such we're able to win the war. Again, all dancing is not just dancing. It's strength, it's hope, but it's always with words that are appropriate words. In other words, strength, hope, belief, and that's what we have to do. So in summary, it's sharing with others, it's being present, it's creating a routine, it's what's that? Yeah, please. No, so they say that even adults should watch what they watch, because it could etch could be remain forever. Young children should definitely be shown as much as you can. It's a very difficult environment we live in, because everyone has these things, and it's just so hard to protect people. But as much as you can, children, and I'm saying it's not for myself, I'm not a therapist, as you know, but they should be sheltered from seeing as much as possible. The less they see, the better. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't talk to them. You shouldn't be dishonest. You shouldn't tell them the world is normal. The world is not normal at the moment. So we should have age-appropriate discussions with children and ask them how they're feeling, and that we should definitely shelter them from the feeling, from these images. Yeah.